Hi, and welcome to Entrepreneurship with Christo. So once again today, I'm interviewing Paz Pisarski from the Community Collective. So this is part of our startup series, and the intention is to join a young entrepreneur through their journey, contrast it across those stages. So this is the second one. We've got another one booked in for February, I believe it is, and then more than likely we'll do one before the middle of next year. So I have to say, this was such a fun conversation to have with Paz. She's a vibrant, intelligent, and very centered human being. We had a lot of fun. We went to all sorts of places. This one was really one of the best ones that I've done, and I really, really enjoyed it. So please enjoy my conversation with Paz Pisarski. Quick introduction, Paz Pisarski. So you joined us 4 months ago to talk about your business. This is part of our startup series. So you're a young female entrepreneur kicking goals out in the world. You're a musician. You're a business person about town. You're an impressive human being, I say. So maybe just bring us up to speed with your business, what it's about, and then let's talk about a little bit about what was going on 4 months ago for those who haven't listened to the podcast for a while.
Definitely. It's so good to be back. It's great to see you and have this conversation again. So thanks for having me. Perhaps if anyone, is listening to this one, they haven't listened to part one, you can totally listen to part one. But I think the long short of it is, this is the continuation of a story of how we accidentally started a business that went viral during the pandemic, and I quit my job in 2022, and now I've been running as a company for just over 2.5 years.
Not a small thing.
So we spoke in...
The 2.5 year thing is important because I sound rude when people go, I've started this business, I've had it going for 3-4 months. Okay, not a business. Not a business. In 2 years, if you're still going, we can talk. So you're over that threshold.
Definitely. Well, 98% of businesses fail in the first year.
Yeah.
Majority of businesses take 5 years to generate a profit. It's really tough. Mm-hmm. It's really hard. No matter what kind of company you're building, whether it's a bricks and mortar cafe, an online fintech company, it's tough. Mm-hmm. And at the moment, we're recording in 2024, there's an economic downturn, there's the attention grab left, right, and center, trust is the hottest commodity, there's information overload, interest rates are going up, house prices are expensive, it's tough to even spend less than $100 on your weekly food bill.
All right. And my coffee bill, bill's been impacted, my wine bill's been impacted, like these are important things.
Exactly. These are important things, and it's tough. And I think people are tired. I'm seeing mass fatigue and mass exodus, especially in the community industry. People are unsubscribing from newsletters, communities, memberships, and trying to double down on what am I gaining value from here and what do I want to enroll in. I think this element of enrollment is such a huge thing that I've been learning from an incredible person called Seth Godin. He speaks about enrollment. What are we actually committing to these days and how a business is serving us? And so building a business is tough, especially if you've done it in the last 5 years. And so, the Community Collective became profitable within 3 months of launching and registering it as a company. Now, it is important to know that we built a community for a year before that date where we were registered as a company and launched our first paid product. But our intention wasn't to build a business, and our intention has been to serve community builders. So we exist to serve companies to build a community strategy in order to double down on their growth, increase their revenue, and derive more impact to their customers. And so a lot has happened in the last 4 months. Things move very quickly. When we last spoke, it was the 2nd of July in 2024. I was still based in the Surf Coast, where I'm tuning in from today as well, in Victoria, in Australia, on the land of the Wadawurrung people. And, at that time, we just actually wrapped up a huge experiment that we did for the first time, which I'm now seeing the effects of as very positive. So I was very happy with that experiment. I can tell you a bit more about what that was. Mm-hmm. But at that time, the Community Collective, we run our business in seasons.
Yep.
So for 8 months of the year, we are on. and delivering programs, coaching, partnerships, events. It's all happening. And then 4 months of the year, we are off. So no programs, no events, no coaching, no nothing. Just the newsletter will still get sent once a month. Yeah, socials will still go out. Mm. But we have massive downtime to recoup, plan, reflections, lots of retrospective. So you caught me just at the end of a four-month delivery phase, and then I went into 2 months of off period. Mm-hmm. So
because you were heading off overseas at that point, I think like in a few days.
It was 2 days before I flew to Madrid
right. As
well. And so basically we spent a month in Europe. And so at that time it was, you know, just the end of financial year. That was actually the first year that we ran at a loss for the community collective. So that was a big point of time of our first financial year. We were profitable. And then that second financial year, we weren't profitable. Which
was that a drop in revenue, or did you take on costs thinking that the business was going to grow at X, and you think, okay, we had a delta there? Because you take risks, right? You go, you know, I'm gonna do this thing. I'm gonna do that thing. Each one has a cost.
So let's go back to the experiment that we ran. That was a huge roll of the dice. So what we did in June, just before, was one, we ran an end of financial year sale, which we've never done. Mm-hmm. And two, earlier this year, we hired 3 staff.
Right.
And then we also brought forward a lot of expenses. So our revenue increased by 45%, but our expenses also increased with staffing. And then also just our tech tool bill increased by 250% just with multiple providers increasing their price for the same service.
Yep.
So that was also a very expensive time. So also just, you know, the cost of everything increased.
Yep.
But we also strategically brought forward a lot of expenses and then delayed a lot of revenue to then come in July. So what happened was we ran an end of financial year sale experiment for our cohort program. So at the Community Collective, we run an 8-week training program to help businesses build a community strategy. Mm-hmm. We do that twice a year in March and September. Mm-hmm. So basically we wanted to run an end of financial year sale, and we sold the program at the current price it was in June 2024 to anyone who wanted to buy it before prices increased by $500 to $800.
Yep.
And now what was really interesting was we were having a lot of assumptions that, one, there were a lot of budgets that people had that they needed to bring forward and pay for in that financial year for PD, for their staff. People also wanted an opportunity to buy it at the current price before prices increased. And we, at that time, I think we had 600 people on the wait list that wanted to, you know, lock in their place for the program, which is now Cohort 5, which started in September.
Right.
So now we're recording in October. So it's been 4 months. And so our assumption was that, one, people would buy in the end of financial year sale, and two, it would help increase the revenue of the program itself. But one of our biggest fears was that we would bring forward all of these people that would usually apply in our normal recruitment process a month before the program, meaning that we would actually sell the program at a lower cost, and we'd actually bring forward a lot of revenue, and then we wouldn't even get new people in there.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Your pipeline, you weren't letting your pipeline do its thing. You were kind of, yeah. So suddenly you're discounting it for no good reason. Well, potentially.
Yeah. We were fearing that actually we just brought forward all these people and that we would actually then have less than we normally would in a recruitment period.
Plus so a lump in delivery too.
A massive fear, but we wanted to trial something new. And so now today I can hand on heart say that was the best thing that we did this year. It worked well in our favor. Our fears were wrong.
Right.
And actually, to give you an indication, for a normal recruitment period, we get about 60 to 80 applications for people to join the program. We ran the end of financial year sale. We had 35 people apply, which is like great new testing
conversion.
Experiment.
Yep.
And then in our normal recruitment period, we had an additional 98 people join the program. So we had an additional 120 applications.
Yep.
So 120, even that normal recruitment period without the end of financial year sale was almost 45% more than our usual recruitment period. So that was mind-blowing.
What did you attribute 158
applications in total for that whole cohort five combining end of financial year sale.
So that's more than double what you would normally have. So what do you attribute that to?
Well, we ran some experiments, and one, I think the biggest thing is, okay, so we ran a couple of experiments for the program. So back on this podcast in July, you actually asked me some of the goals that we wanted to achieve, and I went back and listened to it, and actually this brought me to shock because, yeah, one of the things that we spoke about was our dream was to lock in an incredible speaker for the next program, one of them being Seth Godin.
Yep.
We actually locked in Seth Godin. So we interviewed him last week.
How'd you do that?
For the program. And we have 102 people in this program at the moment. We're in week six at the moment. And we all learned from Seth Godin. He just launched his new book, This Is Strategy, today, actually. And it was phenomenal. So one, I think that having someone like Seth Godin, if you've never met or heard of Seth Godin, he is in the Hall of Fame for marketing. He's a published author with over 40 books and is a phenomenal human based in New York. And so one, I think that was a huge catalyst. He also posted about the program on his own LinkedIn, which just my phone blew up that day. He has over 250,000 people, you know, in that orbit. So definitely that created this huge groundswell. We were featured in Startup Daily, Startup News. All these publications started reaching out to us. Everyone was just like, how did this happen? I need to learn from him. We had alumni wanting to come back to learn from him. So there was this huge groundswell that someone of that caliber, you know, spoke to our members, majority in Australia, but also all around the world. So that was, I think, one thing that definitely attributed to that.
You would think Seth Godin would be good at marketing.
Yeah.
Like eating his own dog food.
Funny that. He is the most genuine, kind, hilarious and relatable person. And it was a very special moment for many of our members who have looked up to him for decades.
Right.
Even our past headline speakers of previous programs who we look up to, it was their idol and they asked to come back to the program and join it. Yep. And, you know, we had, people left, right and center wanting to come back. So that was a really beautiful thing to bring our community together to learn from him. And just, you know, we had 75 minutes online just asking questions and talking about how to build a movement.
Right. That's awesome. I've heard of the guy. I've seen him a little bit on LinkedIn. Don't, you know much beyond that, but that's a great testimonial from you.
And what
a great impact. And look, you know, I'm sure it works both ways, right? He saw some value in some rich and unique content from you because your business is not, you didn't set up a bakery or anything like that, right? You know, what you've done is novel. I don't even know if you've got any competitors out there. I can't recall. Do you?
Oh yes, definitely. Yeah, there's quite a few communities of community builders, a lot in the other parts of the world as well. But yeah, I love the people led by community. There's Swarm Conference, which is run by Australian community managers. There's Feverbee, which is a consulting that also does training programs.
Right.
But in terms of, you know, I guess an identical program that's 8 weeks to help people build a community strategy is very niche.
Yeah.
And I've been speaking about this concept of niche cubed recently because it's not enough to just be niche anymore. Yep. There is so much out there that you have to be niche cubed. So niche to the power of three. So what does that actually mean? In an example, it would be if you're trying to serve an audience, well, it's not enough just to serve everyone.
Mm.
It's not even enough just to serve lawyers. It's not even enough to serve lawyers in Melbourne. You have to be niche cubed. So find three traits that this audience persona has in common. So for us, that was community builders, a professional trait, in Melbourne, a location trait, and they had to be in the startup space in an industry.
Right.
So we made
– and left-handed.
We created so much friction to join. Yeah, and now, you know, 3 years on, we've like, you know, broken down those barriers and you just have to be a community builder
Yep.
anywhere in the world. So location's gone, any industry, it's agnostic now. So we've let go of those two. So when so now we're just niche, but we started off as niche cubed.
You will not believe this, and this kind of like a little bit off the beaten track here, because this is not about me. But I had a business back in the early 2000s called X2O, which is really just a shorthand way to say Christo, X2O, you know. But it was based on communities of practice. I don't know if you've ever heard of the book Communities of Practice, but it was some theories around communities of practice. And we had this, took this initiative. It was really just an adjunct to my business at the time for a marketing, because I was doing recruitment. And so I thought, how do I keep the people that I'm connecting with and the good talent? How do I keep them in my foyer, you know, metaphorically in my foyer, so I can reach it, look out and go, okay, there's Paz. She's really good for this job. And off she goes. I have to find her again through a database. You know, I wanted something better than that. And so I ended up having this get together every Wednesday morning at some ungodly hour in the morning for breakfast and coffee. And all these, you know, project managers, programmers, IT specialists, you know, architects, whatever, they'd come in and I'd put them in these little groups. And then I'd mix them up so they can talk about, you know, contemporary topics and whatever. So I've kind of have a realized just now, you know, like I've touched into this space, but it's certainly, yeah. What I should have done was turned it into a LinkedIn or something like that, but who knew?
Well, it could have also been ahead of its time.
Yeah.
You know, it's almost like the industry and market, definitely there were people super interested, and that's amazing that, you know, you're smart enough to even have built that at that time.
People
and
were
I think
paying
that there's an element of now, more than ever in 2024, businesses realize that you need to get creative to cut through the noise. Totally. And to do that, you need to build human connections, which is relationships, which founders and businesses have been doing since, you know, the test of time. Mm. But now more than ever, we're seeing, you know, what makes Canva the juggernaut that it is today? Well, it has a community of over 150 million creators. It's valued at a $45 billion valuation. Mel Perkins at South by Southwest Sydney last week said that she testaments to the community for the incredible growth of Canva, because they have 150 million people building templates on Canva and teaching other people how to use that. You can't hire a team to do that and pay for it and actually grow at that rate. And so you look at Notion, they have millions and millions of users, and they have 4 million paid users, but they have these communities of hundreds and thousands of people all around the world running meetups to talk about how they use Notion.
Yeah.
You know, it's fascinating.
Right. Okay. So just going on about the nexus, you know, I guess what was and what is now. So what are the key things? So there's Seth Godin and I guess this surge in your demand. What else has happened that was significant, and you know, since then?
Yeah, definitely. And also just to close the loop on the Seth Godin element and the cohort, and the one other factor that did attribute to the applications being 158 at that time, I think was also we did an analysis of the last four programs, and we worked out what was the most common way that members found out about us and what was the deciding factor for them to pull the trigger and go, yeah, I'm in.
Yeah.
And so we analyzed that data and we found that the majority of people found us through word of mouth referrals. Mm-hmm. And then the second one was that they saw someone that they trust post about it on LinkedIn. Okay. It was so specific. And we went out and asked all these people, and that was the two major themes that we found.
Yep.
So this recruitment period, we said, okay, great. How do we double down on that? And then we also ran two birthdays for the Community Collective. We threw a birthday in August at Canva HQ, actually in Sydney. And then we also were at the Commons in South Yarra in Melbourne. We had over 100 people and brought together everyone in person and met a lot of people there as well who, you know, built trust and joined the program. So I think that was really interesting. But yeah, we figured out that they were the two elements that were the strongest way. So we worked out, okay, how can we double down and build more of that? Mm-hmm. And what we did differently is we looked at, okay, if referrals are strong, how do we encourage people to refer? And if LinkedIn posts are strong, how do we encourage people to share LinkedIn? And so we created all of these assets, badges, copy, and we reached out to all of our alumni, over 100 of them, to share a post on LinkedIn and then to reshare our launch post. And I think that launch post had over 60 reshares. It reached hundreds of thousands of people alone just by one post. So we funneled all these people in just to one LinkedIn post to reshare it, which worked really well. And then we also looked at, you know, I reached to a point in that recruitment period where actually I felt extremely overwhelmed. Mm-hmm. We had 636 people on the wait list at that point. We just ran two events in Melbourne and Sydney. I had 355 emails in my inbox. I had 600 people DM me on LinkedIn. And one, I was personally overwhelmed. Our team inbox was getting bombarded. There was so much inbound on these surface level questions about the program that felt really overwhelming at the time. And so I reached out to our cohort Slack and said, would any alumni help us reply to some of these questions and just talk to other people about your experience?
Right.
In return, we'll give you a free copy of Seth Godin's new book, This Is Strategy, and introduce you to Balance the Grind. Yeah.
You've just answered my next
question. And what we did is...
How did you compel them to act? Because I thought, okay, so if you're sending it, you know, post something on LinkedIn or do this, do that, I'm thinking, what's compelling them to act? I mean, okay, what's in it for me? Like, why should I do anything?
100%. Yeah, of course. You know, it's a two-way value exchange always. So, you know, we really wanted to value our members in that. But I basically posted on our cohort Slack and was asking for help. And I said, would anyone want to join a one-hour online co-working session? And you can help us just reply to all these questions.
Yep.
And, you know, we'll give you X, Y, Z. We had 41 people reply in Slack.
Right.
We organized online co-working. We had 25 of our alumni join us for an hour. Collectively, we reached out to 458 people on LinkedIn mm-hmm. with a DM to help answer their questions. And that, I think, also then was this huge catalyst for the applications, because someone that they knew or trust or never met recommended the program that wasn't us.
Mm.
And in exchange, we had this beautiful moment where, you know, we're on this online butter call, just reaching out to people and helping each other. And then we all get this book and we get to read about it. There was just more, you know, it was just this beautiful moment of community, helping community. But I had to be vulnerable in that moment and actually, you know, wear my heart on my sleeve and like say to everyone, like, I feel overwhelmed and I'm asking for help. Would anyone be interested?
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. You know, what comes to mind, Paz, and I haven't read much about this. It's kind of more been sort of recounted to me. Jiu-jitsu. You're not thinking about stuff and going, okay, I'm going to do this and this, and then, you know, then I do that, I'm going to do this. You're kind of dealing real time with the evolving situation in front of you, and then, you know, doing the armbar or the lockup as you think, you know, as you see the opportunity appear, and then going with it. If you've got an advantage and getting out of it, if you haven't got an advantage, I think it's probably worth, I mean, look, it sounds like you're doing it anyway. You know, you kind of sound like you're really, really in sync with, I guess, the evolving situation in the moment and kind of responding to that. And I think that it's a strength to feel that vulnerability. To acknowledge it is another thing. And I think there's a place for it and there's a value in it in certain circumstances. But to feel it and to acknowledge it to yourself, I think is critical. You know,
and then particularly acknowledge it to other people.
Yeah, to the significance in your life. You've got a significant person in your life, so they know that where you're at, and we don't conflate other issues with the fact that you're freaking out right now, right? Can I just circle back to the creation of communities? You know, you mentioned, you know, lawyers in Melbourne, lawyers doing startups. So, because in my mind, I'm a simple creature. You know, when you first started talking about it, I thought, this is, and clearly I'm wrong. This is communities for developing communities that are obviously outside the business, who are prospective customers of a business. So they become advocates and all that sort of stuff. And I presume there's an element of truth to that. But, and then you mentioned lawyers. I'm imagining that if I was selling something to lawyers, right, if I had a service to sell to lawyers, to create a community of lawyers who I haven't necessarily done any business with, but to provide some sort of, you know, not only lawyers, and in fact, you know, I've got a, you know, question mark on a particular thing I'm doing with fund managers, you know, couldn't be any drier, right? Investment people, fund managers, bank, you know, da, 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 you know, so financial services people who, God bless them, are, you know, very dry, boring, and conservative. Does it apply there? Do you think it's doable there? It just needs the right kind of thinking.
Yeah, it's a great question. You know, I've also built communities for founders who are typically time poor, stressed, strapped for cash, have a million things going.
Mm-hmm. And don't play well with others.
We're here asking them to join a community and come to an event and help someone else.
By definition,
their business,
they work on their own. You know, they're lone wolves.
that's tough. That's tough. MYOB, accounting platform, they run a community for accountants.
Right.
You know, our accountants, you know, dealing with 50 clients, doing the books, it's end of financial year. Now they need to participate in a community. Like, how are we, you know, dealing with that? And, you know, I think the biggest trap that we fall into is the assumption black hole. So the assumption black hole is, I assume that this group of busy lawyers need a community. I'm going to build this community and I'm going to ask them, hey, they didn't join my community. I'm going to blame it on they're too tired and time poor and busy and they work really hard and now they don't have time for the community.
Yep.
It's their fault.
Yeah.
I assume that it's their fault.
Yeah.
But actually, in the assumption black hole, we don't see that we have made these assumptions. We've built something that no one asked for. The lawyer, did they ask you for this community?
That's right.
Maybe not. Let's say they didn't in this particular analogy that we're riffing off. And now we're actually blaming the people that didn't even ask for something that they didn't even
We get in our own head. We get in our own head. I've got this great little story that I tell to describe exactly that, and I love that insight. It's very, very relevant. So imagine we're living in the same apartment, right? You're downstairs, I'm upstairs. I know you. We're acquaintances. We're not necessarily friends, but you know, sometimes I might borrow an egg or some sugar from you, right? So I think, my fry pan's just ruined and I've got to cook dinner. I'm going to go downstairs and borrow a fry pan from Paz. And on the way downstairs, I'm walking down, I didn't take back the sugar and I didn't want, you know, her eggs and whatever. And then, you know, she'll get all grumpy with me or, you know, she'll begrudgingly give me a fry pan and then, you know, she'll get the shits and whatever. And by the time I get to your door and I knock on your door, I've created this environment in my head. You open the door, hey Peter, how you doing? What can I do for you? Fuck you and your fry pan, right? I'll just get the shits and walk off. No, I wouldn't do that. But my point is that we do get caught up. We conflate things and we manifest this imaginary world that's completely removed from the reality. You could have rocked up and gone, yeah, sure, man, here you go. You know, keep it, I just bought a new one sort of thing. You know, you just don't know. So I think you make a really, really good point. If you have a self-managed superannuation fund or business and are considering including Bitcoin on your portfolio or balance sheet and want to do it safely and cost-effectively, contact Digital Asset Custody Solutions today. Digital Asset Custody Solutions taps into over 10 years of experience in digital assets, including Bitcoin and stablecoins. They are also the only provider of digital asset attestations to help you when it comes time to submit your returns. Visit www.dacs.io or call 1-300-346-495 for more information today. Get off zero Bitcoin today with Digital Asset Custody Solutions.
Well, what you've just explained is the symptom of the assumption black hole.
Yeah.
You know, we've assumed that something needs to exist and then we launch it and no one attends. And now we're in the black hole. And then the symptom of the assumption black hole is the anxiety. You know, people call it the crazy monkey. The crazy monkey gets launched into your head and the crazy monkey, it's their fault. They screwed it up. You've been great, but this is their fault and everything sucks. And now they're going to hate me. And actually, now it's all public. You know, we start spiraling.
Yep.
And so where's the circuit breaker in our thinking? And I was actually thinking about this morning, you know, being a founder is freaking hard. Building a company is even harder. Building a community within a company as a founder is diabolical. Mm-hmm. And I get stuck in my head all the time, but something that I come back to as a circuit breaker is using meditation, which I think we might've touched on last time, but this japa meditation, you get a mantra like Om Namaha Shivaya is a mantra I'm doing. I do it for 40 days. You chant it 180 times a day for 40 days. But the thing that is the circuit breaker, if you see the dancing monkey, you throw a bucket of water on the monkey and it sits down and it stops talking for a while. The bucket of water is the japa meditation. I start spiraling and I'm like, oh my God, I've made a wrong decision. Everyone's going to hate me. I go, Om Namah Shivaya. And it just circuit breaks it.
Right.
And I stop that thought and now I'm not going down into the black hole. I say it in my head.
And you visualize throwing water on a monkey?
Chanting it. Nah. Yeah, of course. No, I just made that up. But then. But, you know, the thing is, another analogy for this is the, you know, Ben Davies, who's a community coach at the Community Collective, gave an incredible analogy in our community strategy workshop in week 2 of the program. And he said, imagine you're on a dance floor.
Yep.
And the DJ, the warm-up DJ, his responsibility is to get everyone dancing. Mm-hmm. Now, the warm-up DJ starts and the dance floor is empty, but there's 100 people in this room kind of just, you know, having drinks on the peripheries. Now, the DJ is sitting there and he's playing his tunes and he's going, God, this party sucks. No one wants to dance. It's their fault. They don't want to dance. They haven't brought the right shoes and they're not those kind of people. But if the DJ just plays Dancing Queen, then everyone will get on the dance floor because it's a great song.
Right.
And maybe if you actually went up and asked to someone, hey, what's your favorite song? Do you have any requests? And they go, oh my God, please play something from the Black Eyed Keys. And then you know, start belting that and everyone starts dancing. So the assumption black hole is the DJ goes, oh my God, they're screwed. They didn't want to dance. But actually, if he just asked them what they wanted and delivered that, it would happen. So same in community building and building a business.
Yeah. And it's that, and I talk about this when I lecture at uni. There's one of your key jobs as an entrepreneur is to connect your imagined world with the reality. And, you know, that's in essence what you're really talking about. There's always a gap between and this is going to be the title of this podcast, you know, the assumption black hole and crazy monkeys. Okay. I've got to tell you, I've got a mate who he's been on the podcast, Peter Long. He was actually the first guy I interviewed. He's an investor. But, you know, we were talking about something ages ago, 6 months ago or something. And he said, look, mate, not my circus, not my monkey. You know, and I loved it as a quote. I thought, that's fantastic. So I've gone off, and he knows, you know, I've gone off and used it in so many places. Not my circus, not my monkey. I've just been overseas. I got back a couple of weeks ago and we caught up for a wine the other day. He bought me a monkey. He didn't buy me a monkey. I beg your pardon. He didn't buy a monkey. He bought me a mug. He bought me a mug. And on the mug, it says, I've got it downstairs. I'd show you. It says, well, actually, it is my circus and therefore these are my monkeys.
Oh my God. So it would be even funnier if he did bring a live monkey, but I'd question where he got it from. But
yeah. Wow. And the ethics of dragging around a monkey. I just misspoke. But it, very interesting. And I love the visual metaphors that you create. And you know, I'm thinking this conversation for other entrepreneurs. I mean, you know, you're talking about your business and you came in within context and it's fantastic. And I think the journey that you're going through is really interesting, really, really interesting, because you are in a new space and there isn't something that's, you know, templated that you can pull out and go, yep, this is the way we butter our bread with this industry. It's very, very interesting, but it has so many applications in terms of the energy and the spirit and I guess the mindset that you need to have as you're going through this journey, particularly as a younger entrepreneur who hasn't been through, you know, a bazillion, you know, ventures. There is support out there, but it's limited, and particularly at your stage now, you're really climbing on your own now. Like maybe if you were starting and this was your first one and whatever, there'd be all this. But really, you're on your own now. You're climbing up the summit and you're on whatever you've got on you. And if you're going to get up there, you're going to get up there on your own. Nobody's going to be able to, you know, nudge you along, because there's nobody up. It's very few people who have the resilience and I guess the drive to endure that uncertainty, particularly because in a lot of ways, and I hear this all the time, they conflate risk into one big risk, but in actual fact you're dealing with momentary risks all the time. You know, the risk associated with that, mitigate, move, you know, respond, understand,
running experiments.
And that's exactly what it is. That's exactly what it is. You've got a hypothesis, you test the hypothesis, fail, latch. Right, you know, test, fail, latch, and maybe fail, you know, maybe rethink the hypothesis, but whatever it is.
Well, latch. Oh my God.
Then there's the multiplier effect, you know. So then suddenly you put your foot down. Yeah, the fuel's getting through, and we're driving, and oh my God, we're going to go. We're not just going to do 10 kilometers an hour. We're going to go to 100, and can we handle that? Right. Because obviously there are other ramifications in terms, you know, resources and cash flow and all that sort of stuff. So I think they're really interesting insights, and it's a different way of learning too. It's learning through storytelling. you know, and you know, here's my journey, and it's not like giving away the secret sauce. So you know, I think it's, you know, enormously valuable. So okay, so we're here now. So it is, what is it, 22nd of.
But even just to, you know, double down on what you just said there, it's funny because I don't feel alone ever, and I think that it's so important as a founder, as a community builder, as anyone in this world, mm-hmm. to wrap yourself in support. Mm-hmm. And very early on, I built my own personal advisory board just to help Kaz in her life, in business and in career. And yes, whilst I might be, you know, the only co-founder still in this company running it with an incredible team, but that support is so key by making sure that we have an advisory board of five incredible humans who have built four or five sold companies all over the world and done this before. We have 10 ambassadors. We have 12 alumni editors. We have 14, you know, hosts and mentors and people who are in our orbit to make sure that when shit hits the fan, and I've never dealt with so many things that gets thrown our way, I can call the phone and message someone on WhatsApp and go, would you mind if I ask you a question about this particular topic because I'm stuck?
Yeah, yeah.
And building that moat of people who, you know, if I'm going to climb Everest, I could go at it alone and put everything in my backpack, but I can only get so far. But that also sounds really tough.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'd probably only make it to base camp and then I'd be like, whew, all right, I'm going to quit. But, and that's how so many companies stop as well after even they've been going. And I think the ones that go further along are the ones that have climbed Mount Everest with a huge team around them, because when they cut their foot, someone else can put a band-aid on it.
Yeah, sure. Look, you know, I agree. I have to say, I mean, a lot of this is really, you have to do the climbing though. I recently listened to the audiobook Atomic Habits, and I highly recommend it. That baby steps, that developing habits that allow you, give you the framework to operate within, is very, very powerful. I think he's done an extraordinary job in explaining it. And I have to say, I kind of, you know, this information has kind of become apparent to me, you know, after so many, you know, decades on the planet. But he synthesized it really, really well. And I think for an entrepreneur, because really you are time poor and really utilizing, you don't want to be wasting your effort doing things that aren't going to give you at least baby steps forward each day. You know, I try and do three things each day that got me forward somehow. I try, not always successfully, but so it's so easy to take your foot off the gas because nothing else is driving you other than your discipline, your ability to discipline yourself to actually get stuff done and say no to, no, I can't catch up with you at 3 o'clock for a wine as much as I'd like to. I need to push through.
It's so true. And I'm so glad that you brought up James Clear. I'm actually going to an event that he's running with Seth Godin tomorrow.
Oh, wow. Okay.
which is phenomenal online. And so, you know, James Clear, phenomenal human. And, you know, the biggest takeaway I had from that book is it's 1% every day.
Yeah.
And then you actually have to build a process to help you do that 1%. And it's actually not about how you showed up on your good days. It's actually how you showed up on your bad days.
Totally.
Because every single Monday I have this habit that I learned from Michael Batko at Startmate, where I write down every single Monday, 8 a.m., I've got a cup of hot water, which I drink, which sounds super weird, but I love it. And I write down in a journal the three things that I have to get done that week that help us move and achieve our strategy and goals for the year.
Yep.
So every Monday I have to look at our strategy. Okay, this is our vision. These are three metrics and that we need to achieve. Okay, what are the three actions that's going to move that forward this week? And by Friday, 5 p.m., I have to achieve all of those. And by the time I get to Wednesday and I'm in 1,000 different places, I don't even know what I'm working on now. I go, oh, what was I meant to do? And I go back to that list, which is a recurring invite in my calendar.
Right.
And I look at it and I go, oh, yes. Okay, great. Send partnership proposal to XYZ. Right. Amazing.
Yeah.
Cool. I'll do that list. Right now.
Yeah.
And that accumulation of 2.5 years of doing three actions every week that help us achieve our goals.
Yeah.
You know, our one North Star this year at the CC was to welcome 110 people through our programs, and we just hit 140 people this year alone. and it's October, and I am so happy because last year we did not hit our North Star, and this year we did. And that is just such a huge accumulation of our whole team's effort that I'm just so proud of.
Yeah, fantastic, fantastic. All right, let's talk about what the next 4 months. So what is October? So November, December, January, February. So where are you going to be at end of Feb 25?
End of Feb 25. Well, I take 3 months off a year off the business because I heard a great – well, I've been doing this for years, but also – I heard from Don Price at Atlassian that you spend so much time on the hustle. So every 1 minute you spend on hustle, 1 minute you spend on self-care.
Okay.
So that just reinforced my habit and the seasonal nature of the community collective. So I will take all of January off. You're going to do a road trip around South Australia.
Nice.
And then basically in the next 4 months, I would love to reset our strategy. So we'll review our strategy in December. We'll catch up with our advisory board and our team, and we'll review what worked well and what didn't work well this year, what's in the green and what's in the red on off track. And currently what's been in the green is our cohort program and our coaching and consulting services. So we've brought on many new clients this year, working with incredible businesses from sales companies to a learning design community to Mildura co-working space for entrepreneurs. So we've been building community strategies for those companies and working with them for 3 months at a time. And we have clients that we've been working with for 2 years. So those two areas of the company has been going extremely well. So I want to double down on that and set higher, more ambitious metrics to really work on what's working. And then what's been in the red is our partnership acquisition and our recruitment services, I think, which we can definitely do better to refine. But I'm the best believer and biggest champion of double down on what's working and being known for something and one thing only, and don't spread yourself too thin.
Yeah.
So I really want to double down on cohort and coaching. I'll refine the partnerships and recruitment. But really just work on servicing our current partners, the Nudge Group, which does incredible recruitment, Nudge Productions, which do incredible film and videography, and Discourse as well, an online platform for communities. Mm-hmm. So just absolutely over deliver and do incredible things with them and really look at what's next. I think servicing the demand is the biggest challenge we have at the moment. Today we have 753 on our wait list.
Wow.
And
you're going to hit triple figures.
The bigger
soon.
The program gets. Or
quadruple figures.
Yeah. I mean, the bigger the, you know, we have 102 in this current program and 45 people running that program to service those hundreds of people. So thinking about scale, I think, is the next big element. And then I actually wrote on a notebook before this call that I'd love to bring in James Clear, the author of Atomic Habits, into our program so our members can learn about the power of habit stacking. Mm. So to be confirmed, I'd love to invite people on like Steph Claire Smith and Laura Henshaw from Kick, incredible Australian entrepreneurs, and share about their community building journey. I'd love to welcome in Priya Parker, would be an incredible person to bring into our community program for our members to learn from. After the Art of Gathering, Simon Sinek, Derek Sivers, these are the dream people dream on our list. So, I'm trying to, really set the bar high to really
why not?
Our members can learn.
Swing for the bleachers, mate. Swing for the bleachers. Go big or go home, and you're definitely going big.
I can't make any promises, but now that I've said it, it makes it a little bit more real. So we'll see how we go.
Very real. It's captured on audio. I have evidence that you've committed to that. So
yeah,
no slouching, lady. No slouching. I think of that's a great spot to leave it. Do you have any final things you would just want to, mention before we wind up?
I think the biggest thing that I've learned this year is to make sure you remember that you're running a marathon, not a sprint. But we're so used to sprinting. And so what are the habits, processes that I have in place to make sure that they remind me that I'm running a marathon? So something that I did actually in the last 3 months was I wrote a playbook for PAS.
Oh.
So I wrote a PAS playbook, and which sounds super stupid because it's a playbook on me and my energy levels, but has been so helpful in the darkest of times to keeping me on track to running that marathon and climbing that mountain with an incredible group of people. So in the PAS playbook, I wrote down what are the habits and things and activities that I need to do each day for my cup of energy to be full?
Mm-hmm.
What do I need to do each week, month, and year?
Yeah.
And then what are the contingency plans in the PAS playbook for when I feel as if I'm on the road to burnout? I've overcommitted, something really bad in the business happens and we get awful piece of feedback and I need to put out fires. What are the contingency plans that I feel demotivated, you know? And so this has been super helpful because now when I'm running a million miles an hour and I'm sprinting, and I stop meditating in the morning and I stop playing guitar on a Sunday and I say no to a lot of social gatherings that actually fill up my cup, I go, oh, this is not in line with how my energy feels for you are on the road to burnout.
Mm.
So I open up the playbook and I go, okay, great. Well, I need to schedule in a whole day with no technology down the coast in the ocean, reading my book and journaling and listening to music and a podcast that motivates me. So I book that in and I go do it and I circuit break. So I'm not perfect. I'm doing my best in the world, but these processes help me understand, okay, great, how can I continue serving everyone that so desperately and genuinely need, I think, support at the moment to not feel lonely in building a community and a company. So
ironically,
yeah, I can't help anyone if I'm running on empty.
Yeah, sure.
If I've blasted and ran the tank on low, the car's not going to go. So
Has
playbook has helped me. Encourage everyone to go away and do some journaling for it.
I would template that up and provide it on your website so people can download. I think it's a great idea, a playbook. And again,
what would
you know,
be yours? What would be yours?
Yeah.
Tell me. What would be your, like? What are the habits that you need to do each month to feel like Peter?
Yeah. That's exactly. Did you really want me to answer that? People.
I really want you to answer that. No, I really want you to answer
well,
that. Well, really
it's funny. I do. There was a period of time where I would three times a week I'd go for a swim down the beach. I live near Brighton and Bayside down in Melbourne. So I'd go for a swim, particularly in winter, swimming in the cold, that kind of, and then doing the Wim Hof sort of breathing exercises. The other thing, and then making sure that I was doing aerobic exercise, get on my bike or go for a run. You know, 5 or 6K run. Unfortunately, as you get older, you injure easier. And so therefore that kind of, but if I don't get those endorphins running through my body, I get depressed. You know, I feel very, very flat and I need to be pulled out of that. So they're the sorts of things, but you know, it's what, Huberman talks about, you know, get the light in your eyes, get your breathing, do the breathing stuff. You know, make sure you have a decent amount of sleep. And to your point, and I, you know, it's a quotable quote in my life is, you know, this is a marathon, not a sprint. I've got the podcast, I've got a startup, and I've got my consulting business, and I lecture, and I have a partner, and I've got
and a life,
and I have, you know, kids, and you know, I just came back from Europe and traveled to 4 countries and whatever. I don't feel busy. I just feel alive, but I get tired. Like while I was away, I got really, really sick. I got food poisoning, and when I got back, I got the flu. So you've got to roll the punches too. You can't stay up here all the time. You've got to go with the ebbs and the flows. But that's basically how I do it. And look, you know, I'd say it works 70% of the time, but sometimes, you know, I fall down.
Of course. And I think, you know, this analogy works so well for that. As entrepreneurs, are we building a business that is a prison that we have locked ourselves in and that we feel chained to and that doesn't give us that time off?
Yep.
Have we looked around and gone, what have I built? I am a victim of my own creation.
Right.
Or have you built a palace of a business where you can sit outside on the grass and you look at this beautiful palace, maybe it's a chateau in the south of France and you've just come back from the beach, you look at the palace and it's operating beautifully and you feel proud to be able to live the life that you live because you built the palace. And that will ebb and flow. And you can build both at the exact same time, but how can you build more of a palace than a prison, I think is the biggest thing that will help.
Yeah, look, I couldn't agree more. And I think that's a wonderful, wonderful spot to leave it on. Thank you so much. That was awesome. You may be the easiest person in the world to interview, Paz. I'm giving you that title until somebody proves me wrong. But I reckon you're the easiest person to talk to. I look forward to meeting you in person one day. It would be lovely. I will send you out our episode 3 calendar invite. Move it if you need to. I look forward to hearing what happens over the next few months. And thank you so much for today. I've loved this. I think that this was probably the best interview I've done. Here's my test. I'm walking away from this with a bunch of things, notes that I wrote. You think I was writing about you? I'm writing about my stuff. I'm going, but think about this. Think about right. So you're an inspiration. You really are an inspiration.
Wow.
So like, you know,
thank you so much.
Hats off to you. And look, you know, you may think, and I could be wrong here, but you may think, you know, you're on this trajectory to success. You're there. You are a success. It's just going to continue to live your own genuine life, and you know that's success. Just having agency and having the power of your own over your own life. But it's not set and forget. You still have to deal with problems on a day-to-day basis, but it doesn't destroy you and put you on your knees. And I think you're a wonderful example to young entrepreneurs everywhere, males and females, or anything in between. enjoy the rest of your day.
It's funny you say that. I feel as if a couple of months ago, I was driving in the car along the surf coast and I was looking out at the ocean and I just had this epiphany of, oh, I have enough.
Yeah.
I have enough.
Yeah, yeah.
I have enough.
Yep.
If the Community Collective fell over tomorrow, God forbid, I would be fine.
Yeah.
I've learned so much. It's been incredible. But I know the Community Collective is going to outgrow anything that I can ever imagine it to because of the need of the time. But I have enough. And if I can close my laptop at 4 p.m., go for a walk.
Totally.
Cook dinner at home and take the weekend to play guitar and then run these incredible workshops for people all over the world to learn about community building. Like, amazing.
Yeah.
And I think that element and that relationship to success, I've never feared failure. If I failed, whatever, I'll just get up and brush myself and move on and I've learned something.
It's another one. Yeah, exactly. Another lesson.
I'm terrified of success. Terrified of success.
Isn't that interesting?
It's fascinating because so many people would probably strive for success and be feared of failure for looking silly in that assumption black hole. But the fear of success probably keeps me up more at night because what if you do build the prison and you're strapped to it?
Well, I would argue that it's not just you've built a prison. I think that the fear of success is you've got to own it. You've got to own the fact that you have been successful and it's not a prison and it's everything you wanted it to be. And be okay with it. Because truly, if I failed, the world puts their arm around you, good luck next time, good luck. It's unfortunate. God knows you did well anyway But you've got to have a certain amount. I don't know what word to you. If you're successful and you nail it, without the sizzle and the sausage, you really did nail it, and you close off that section of your life and go tick. Did everything that I wanted and more. And by my measure, I was successful. And in a lot of cases, it's financial success and financial independence at a relatively young age. And then to be able to build on that again and contribute to the community or whatever, that takes something. That takes a character trait that in a lot of cases people struggle with.
Well, it blew me away because, the second year of operation for the financial year, we ran at a loss and I was like, oh, such a silly thing to lose oversight as a founder. And then, we set our financial year goals for the next year and we wanted to generate X amount of revenue by June 30th, 2025. And I just reviewed our metrics for the last quarter and we've already generated over 60% of the revenue that we wanted to make in the whole financial year in 3 months.
Wow.
So we just did more in 3 months this year than we did in our first entire year of business in the first financial year.
Right.
And that you go, oh, I learned so much from, you know, it's not even a failure. It's just I learned so much from that last financial year that I made a pact to never let that happen to the community collective because it needs to be financially sustainable to have more impact. And then looking at the metrics and go, yes.
Yep. Yep.
Down two.
Excellent.
Run some experiments, pays off. So I'm very happy from that. You know, we're not billionaires and we just need enough to live and survive and pay, make payroll. But, you know, that longevity and having 6 to 12 months runway is very conscious, but we need to keep the business lean. And
that's a good metric. All right, mate. All right. I'll close it off there.
All right.
Thank you. That was awesome. Okay, so I hope you enjoyed that conversation with Paz. She's an amazing human being. I love talking to her and I'm looking forward to doing the next one with her. Please feel free to send out any feedback at hello@entrepreneurship.au and we'll see you next time.